Here it is.
From deep inside your radio.
Well, for the second straight week in a row, which would be how you get a straight week, power failed here. Fans are on. Listen to them. I mentioned it last week, but I don't think I brought sufficient attention. There they are. And the nutty thing is, this, the studio whence live programming originates from the Le Show Dome, Le Show World Headquarters, is the hottest place in the building. It's 10 degrees cooler right in the hallway, right outside. Come on. Let's go. Oh, won't go that far. All right. We'll stay here then. Fine. See if I care. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, here is, from the Found Objects Department, Maria Shriver, this very morning.
So are all the shows doing, Tim?
Apparently so. I didn't know that today's show was going to spend a lot of time with, because really, you know, Meet the Press was Tim's show.
Right.
So, yeah. But they're doing big segments on it.
I think he would be, like, mortified with all this.
What? I think you're probably right.
He'd be like, enough already.
Enough already. I'm thinking, I hear that same phrase in my mind.
He'd be like, oh, gosh, shucks.
Yeah, well, I'd be like, enough already. And I'm not even him. Ladies and gentlemen, an international smuggling ring that sold bomb-related parts to Libya, Iran, and North Korea. You know who ran that ring, even though he denies it now. Also managed to acquire blueprints for an advanced nuclear weapon. This, according to a new draft report by the former top UN arms inspector, suggesting the plans could have been shared secretly with any number of countries or rogue groups. This is in today's Washington Post. The drawings were discovered in 2000 on computers owned by Swiss businessmen. They included essential details for building a compact nuclear device that could be fitted on a type of ballistic missile used by Iran and more than a dozen developing countries, according to the report. Back in 2000, back before 9/11, back when things were good, the computer contents were recently destroyed by Swiss authorities, but UN officials cannot rule out the possibility that the blueprints were shared with others before the discovery, according to the report's author, nuclear weapons expert David Albright. These advanced nuclear weapons designs may have long ago been sold off to some of the most treacherous regimes in the world, Albright wrote in a draft copy of the report. The lethality of such a compact bomb would be little enhanced, but its smaller size might allow for delivery by the kind of ballistic missiles such countries have. To many of these countries, it's all about size and weight, Albright said in an interview, much like actresses. No, sorry. These would have been ideal, says Albright, for two of Khan's other major customers, Iran and North Korea. It's unknown whether the designs were delivered to either country or to anyone else, says Albright. The Pakistani government didn't rebut the findings in the report, but said it had cooperated extensively. It considers the AQ Khan affair to be over, says a spokesman for the Pakistani embassy in Washington. Yeah, case closed, successfully. The CIA wouldn't comment. The AQ Khan case is over. Ladies and gentlemen, you should be relieved. We don't know where the plans went, if at all, ever. But, you know, it's the post-9/11 world, so why should we care? The new Iraq, speaking of Iraq, which we weren't, a new Iraqi Marshals Service is going to be organized by the State Department's Bureau responsible for developing rule of law programs in Iraq. It plans to create an Iraqi service to be known as the Judicial Protection Service that will ensure the safe conduct of judicial proceedings and protect judges, witnesses, court staff, and court facilities. State Department plans to hire a contractor, that works out so well, as a judicial security program manager. And they would work out, the contractor, would work out details of how such a marshal service could be put together for the Iraqis. State wants a contractor to put together all the elements so that the department can contract the project to another contractor. It's the way we do things. isn't it? In this post 9/11 world. Hey, relax. It's a compact nuclear weapon, and we don't know where it went. Hello, welcome to the show.
I'd like to tell you that it's fine, but it's not time now. I can't seem to get a word image-wise anyhow. Though the words are flying fast, just don't mean a thing. In a little while, I could tell you everything. But we've taken sides in anger, and we can't back down. Now we're fighting just to bring the other down. And if you think to stop it now, then the next time we'll know how. I'd like to break it to you gently where we go wrong. If the rock begins rolling, we just tag along. If at first we pick the love of things that we both lack, then before we think to stop, we're into hurting back. Then an avalanche of answers must be found too fast. Hasty made just when we should build to last. Love what we like what we share. Correction comes with time to spare. Taken sides in anger and we can't back down. Now we're fighting just to bring the other down. And if you think to stop it now, then the next time we'll know how. I'd like to tell you that it's fine, but it's not time now. I can't seem to get a word in edgewise anyhow. Though the words are flying fast, just don't mean a thing. In a little while, I could tell you everything. But we've taken sides in anger and we can't back down. Now we're fighting just to bring the other down. And if you think to stop it now, then the next time we'll know how.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Oh, a pantload of apologies this week. Did you mean landlord? Rupert Everett, the actor, not the mole, has made an unreserved apology for calling soldiers wimps and suggesting they went into the army to torture prisoners. The star of My Best Friend's Wedding caused consternation with his attack in the Sunday Times of Sunday Telegraph of London in an interview to publicize his new film. He said, in veteran-renowned explorer Sir Richard Burton's day, the film is about Sir Richard, they were itching to get into the fray. Now it is the opposite. They're always whining about the dangers of being killed. Oh, my God, they're such wimps now. The whole point of being in the army is wanting to get killed, wanting to test yourself to the limits, he says. It's pathetic, all this whining. The whole point of going to the army is going to war and getting yourself blown up. That and peeing on prisoners, unquote. But following day, he issued a lengthy statement apologizing without reserve to the many in the country and the hundreds and thousands of others across the world who've lost their brothers and sisters, their mothers and fathers to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and all the countless others. Simpsons have no, not quite. Channel 4 in England has apologized for an error that led to the broadcast of the word wankers in an edition of The Simpsons shown in England at 6 p.m. Sorry. 31 viewers complained to the broadcasting regulator that such language was unacceptable in a program that appeals to children and was broadcast before 9 p.m. Channel 4 apologized to the regulator, saying the incident was caused by an error by one of its compliance staff who had incorrectly certified the program as suitable to be shown as early as 6 p.m. The mistake was not corrected subsequently by another department. Channel 4 regrets these mistakes. No, oh, no, that was just me not commenting. President Bush has admitted to the Times newspaper of London that his gunslinging rhetoric made the world believe that he was, quote, a guy really anxious for war in Iraq. He expressed regret at the bitter divisions over the war and said he was troubled about how his country had been misunderstood. Phrases such as bring them on or dead or alive, he said, indicated to people that I was, you know, not a man of peace, unquote. That's me not commenting. Canadian Prime Minister, see, it's not really necessary. Just leave the pauses. Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper delivered a long-anticipated apology this week to tens of thousands of Indigenous people who, as children, were ripped from their families and sent to boarding schools, where many were abused as a part of official government policy to, quote, kill the Indian in the child, unquote. He condemned the decades-long Canadian federal effort to wipe out Aboriginal culture and assimilate Native Canadians into European-dominated society. Quote, the government of Canada sincerely apologizes and asks the forgiveness of the Aboriginal peoples of this country for failing them so profoundly, Harper declared. We are sorry, unquote. Investigations have established that thousands of Indian, Inuit, and other Native children suffered mental, physical, and sexual abuse in 132 boarding schools, most of them run by Christian churches. The first opened in the late 1800s, the last in Saskatchewan, continued operating until 1996. But we're so much smarter than that now. The treatment of children in Indian residential schools is a sad chapter in our history, said Harper. See, we had the right idea in this country. Just kill them. Don't mistreat them. Just give them those blankets. The Canadian apology was long delayed, apparently was brought forward by the decision of the Australian government earlier this year to apologize to its Aboriginal population for a similar policy of taking the children away. Dateline Canada, again, a conservative member of parliament who on Wednesday told a radio station that former students in those Indian schools need a stronger work ethic, not more compensation dollars, has apologized for his comments. Pierre Poilievre apologized for questioning the value of the compensation to the Indian children who were stolen from their families and put in lovely church schools. He stood in the House of Commons to say he was sorry for his remarks. Dateline New York, the mastermind behind the looting of hundreds of corpses, including that of the host of Masterpiece Theater, the late Alistair Cook, and the sales of the body parts for millions of dollars, has apologized to the families of the dead and to the 10,000 people who received the parts. Michael Mastromarino, a former oral surgeon, admitted charges of enterprise corruption, body stealing, and reckless endangerment at a hearing. Unscreened bodies were carved up at his New Jersey company and sold for dental implants, knee and hip replacements, among other things. He said, his lawyer said, Mastromarino felt the full force and effect of what he did after listening to victims speak. That would not include, of course, the dead. Calling him greedy and heartless, family members asked that he be jailed for the maximum 54 years. Anthony Dumaine, whose father's body was plundered in the scheme, said of the apology, quote, I don't feel like that was from his heart, end quote. Maybe from his fake hip. Former world cycling champion Tom Boonen apologized to his fans this week and said he will accept responsibility for his actions in a cocaine investigation. The cyclist read a brief statement to reporters, but did not specifically confirm or deny allegations that he had taken cocaine just ahead of a surprise out-of-competition doping test late last month, which found traces of the drug in his urine sample. Just a reminder that the Tour de France is about to start, so juice up. Tom Cruise and Dr. Drew Pinsky are feuding over Dr. Drew's views on Scientology. Dr. Drew Pinsky asked in a Playboy interview why Cruise would be drawn to a, quote, cultish kind of environment like Scientology, unquote. He said it's a symptom of a, quote, very deep emptiness and suggests serious neglect in childhood and maybe some abuse, unquote. Cruise's lawyer shot back a response to what he called this unqualified television performer. Burt Fields, the lawyer, said Pinsky is so grotesquely unprofessional as to pretend to diagnose Tom and others without ever meeting them. unquote. Hey, it was good enough for Dr. Bill Frist in the case of that woman in Florida, the brain-dead woman in Florida. Quoting Burt Fields again, the last time we heard garbage like this, referring to Dr. Pinsky, was from Joseph Goebbels, unquote. Pinsky released a statement this week saying, Dr. Drew meant no harm to Mr. Cruz and apologizes if his comments were hurtful. But in any case, it serves as a lesson, ladies and gentlemen, that they're still printing Playboy. Who knew? Reverend John Hagee is now, having expressed his regret for offending Roman Catholics last month, is now extending his apologies to Jews. Hagee, who had publicly endorsed Senator John McCain for president and was repudiated last month by McCain after a website posted a troubling sermon by Hagee about the Holocaust, saying God allowed the Holocaust to happen in order to get the Jewish people to go to Israel to fulfill biblical prophecy. He sent a letter to the national director of the Anti-Defamation League, Abraham Foxman. Hagee said he had, devoted much of my life to combating anti-Semitism and supporting the State of Israel. In a sermon in 1999, I grappled with the vexing question of why a loving God would allow the evil of the Holocaust to occur. I know how sensitive the issue of the Holocaust is and should be in the Jewish community, and I regret if my Jewish friends felt any pain as a result. I cannot deny the tenets of my faith. However, I will work to express my faith in a way that is sensitive to and respectful to others, including the Jewish community. This includes acknowledging the limits of our understanding and seeking to comprehend the mind of God, unquote, John Hagee. That's an if apology. That goes in the if file. Honolulu City Council unanimously rebuked one of its members, Rod Tam, for using the derogatory term wetbacks to refer to undocumented Mexican workers. Before being rebuked, Tam apologized for the remark, saying he did not know the meaning of the term, but agreed with the council's decision to rebuke him. He said, over here in Hawaii, we're so liberal. We have multi-ethnic cultures. We don't think in the same terms of the mainland. People look at it differently. I learned something, and I apologize if I offended anybody. If he first learned of the offending term through a 1950s musical, Flower Drum Song. So blame Rodgers and Hammerstein, ladies and gentlemen. Don't blame Tam. During an appearance on CNN's Larry King Live, an emotional Hulk Hogan apologized for comments he made during telephone conversations with his son Nick Hogan, real name Nick Bolia, who's currently being held in jail in Largo, Florida, serving an 8-month sentence for his role in a car crash that left his friend brain dead and in a coma. He pleaded guilty to felony reckless driving. Audio tapes of Hogan's phone calls to his imprisoned son surfaced online, and during one conversation, the elder Hogan can be heard suggesting to his son that his friend's condition was, quote, God's will. Here we go again. On Larry King, exclusive. Hannity didn't have this. Hogan apologized for the remark and told King his comments were intended to alleviate some of the stress his son was experiencing during the weeks he'd spent in solitary. Hogan was at times fighting back tears. It's a pay-per-view event, isn't it? No, it was Larry King. The heavy metal band Metallica has apologized for asking several bloggers to remove their online reviews of its untitled forthcoming record. The band upset fans originally by suing Napster in 2000 and by removing its music from iTunes in 2003, but says the removal of the reviews was orchestrated by its management company without its permission. St. Paul, Nebraska school officials have apologized for not telling parents about a bomb threat at their children's elementary school in central Nebraska. District officials were hoping to avoid worrying parents. Nevada Governor Jim Gibbons, seeking a divorce from First Lady Dawn, apologized this week for using a state-owned cell phone to send more than 860 text messages over several weeks last year to a woman he says is a longtime friend. Amy Winehouse has apologized for a video that has surfaced online in which she was filmed singing a song that changes the lyrics of a children's lullaby into a racist rant. And, by the way, shows apparent drug paraphernalia on the table. Winehouse held an impromptu press conference on the steps of her home around 2 a.m. one morning this week, where she apologized for the video. I'm the least racist person going, she said, before slamming the newspaper that found the video and put it on its website, calling them irresponsible. Her father says, she's really not permanently drug-addled. She's upbeat, even jolly. I honestly think in 2 years she will be fit, healthy and having babies, and motherhood will be her drug. Unquote, Amy Winehouse's father. Nice touch. The general manager of Boston's Channel 7 announced her resignation after she admitted in court that she went on an alcohol and prescription drug-fueled tirade at Logan International Airport in April. Randy Goldclank, no comment, of course, did not speak to reporters during a brief appearance in court, where she personally apologized to state troopers and agreed to refrain from abusing alcohol or drugs for a year, as long as she could just use them. No, sorry, I think that's not part of it. I'm resigning my position to continue focusing on getting help, her lawyer read from her statement. Her boss said, Randy Goldclank is a talented executive. This has been an unfortunate circumstance. We wish her great success. Unquote. Just get out of here. Fox News has apologized. No, not for that. Forced to apologize to Barack Obama after screening a caption referring to his wife Michelle as his, quote, baby mama, unquote. Bill Shine, senior vice president of Fox News, said a producer exercised poor judgment. Fox carried an interview this week with a columnist about whether Michelle was being unfairly targeted. During the interview, a caption was flashed on the screen saying, quote, outraged liberal, stop picking on Obama's baby mama. Unquote. The term is slang for a woman who has a baby with a man who is not her partner. Obviously, somebody, we know now the person who saw the Tina Fey movie of the same name. She works at Fox News. But wait, ladies and gentlemen, here's Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC.
And now a point of personal privilege. I owe an apology to the good people of Bristol, Virginia, for something stupid that I said last week. I was trying to explain, based on reporting from Democratic strategists, why Barack Obama was campaigning in Southwest Virginia. But without attribution or explanation, I used a term strategists often use to demean an entire community. As they say, when I make a mistake, it's a beaut.
It's, the term was real rednecks. More TV apologies. Here's E.D. Hill, host of the Fox News program America's Pulse.
I want to start the show by clarifying something I said on the show last Friday about an upcoming body language segment. Now, I mentioned various ways the Obama's fist pump in St. Paul had been characterized in the media. I apologize because, unfortunately, some thought I personally had characterized it inappropriately. I regret that. It was not my intention, and I certainly didn't mean to associate the word terrorist in any way with Senator Obama and his wife.
E.D. Hill, the next day, lost her show, America's Pulse, on Fox News. So she lost her show, but she got her tune.
A fist bump, a pound, a terrorist fist jab. The gesture everyone seems to interpret differently. A fist bump. Bump, bump. A fist bump. Bump, bump. A fist bump. A pound, 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 pound. Bump, bump, bump. Bump, pound, pound, pound. Everyone seems to interpret differently. Terrorist fist jab. Terrorist fist jab. 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 Terrorist fist differently. Terror fist. Terrorist. Terror fist. Terrorist. Terrorist fist jab. Terrorist fist jab. Different jab. Different jab. Terrorist.
Terrorist.
Terror fist. Terrorist. Terror fist jab. A fist bump. Jab, terrorist, fist, jab. Everyone seems terrorist, different, seems terrorist, bump, seems terrorist, pound, seems terrorist, jab, seems terrorist, terrorist, seems terrorist. Interpret differently. A fist bump, 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 a fist bump, bump, bump.
Lingers in your ear, but you can't.
from sundown to sunset. It's all in the air, you hear it everywhere. No matter what you do, it's gonna grab a hold on you. California soul. California soul. Yes, when the sun comes up every morning, and if you listen, oh, so carefully, the winds that ride on the high tide whistle.
This is Le Show from California, oddly enough, where it's warm inside. And ladies and gentlemen, now, right now, it's time for news from outside the bubble. Had to make sure I understood that I meant now. A BBC investigation estimates that around $23 billion may have been lost, stolen, or just not properly accounted for in Iraq. The BBC's Panorama program used U.S. and Iraqi government sources to research how much some private contractors, interesting, have profited from the conflict and rebuilding. A U.S. gag order is preventing discussion of the allegations in this country. The order applies to 70 court cases against some of the top U.S. companies. The complaints filed by whistleblowers. But apparently, according to another report, the Justice Department has failed to move on any of those charges as of yet. While President Bush remains in the White House, says the BBC, it's unlikely the gag orders will be lifted. To date, no major U.S. contractor faces trial for fraud or mismanagement in Iraq. According to Henry Waxman, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, it may well turn out to be the largest war profiteering in history. In the run-up to the invasion, one of the most senior officials in charge of procurement in the Pentagon objected to a contract potentially worth $7 billion that was given to Halliburton, a Texas company which used to be run by Dick Cheney before he got to be vice president. Only Halliburton got to bid and won. That's the kind of bidding I like. The search for the most missing billions also led to the program to a house in Acton in West London, where Hazim Shalan lived until he was appointed the new Iraqi government minister of defense. He and his associates siphoned an estimated $1.2 billion out of the ministry. They bought old military equipment from Poland, but claimed it as top-class weapons. Meanwhile, they diverted money into their own accounts. The judge of Iraq's Commission for Public Integrity investigated, and he said, quote, I believe these people are criminals. They failed to rebuild the Ministry of Defense, and as a result, the violence and the bloodshed went on and on. The murder of Iraqis and foreigners continues, and they bear responsibility. Shallan was sentenced to 2 jail terms, but fled the United Kingdom. He said he was innocent and it was all a plot against him. There's an Interpol arrest warrant out for him, but he's on the run using a private jet to move around the globe. It's the Wolf Blitzer interpretation of the phrase. Around the world! Also outside the bubble, from the Independent newspaper in London, the plight of Iraqi refugees is now worse than ever, with millions struggling to survive in desperate conditions and with little hope of finding sanctuary. And the world community, especially Western countries, have not only failed to help, but are also erecting fresh obstacles to prevent the dispossessed men, women, and children from settling on their shores. This is all according to a new report by Amnesty International. Many governments have attempted to justify their hardline stance by citing supposed improvements in the security situation in Iraq. But after a marked decline, the level of violence is rising again. In March and April alone, more than 2,000 people, mostly civilians, died during clashes between U.S. and Iraqi government forces and the Shia militia Mehdi Army. The Iraqi diaspora is now one of the largest in modern times, with more than 2 million people fleeing abroad, another couple million estimated to be out of house but still in country. The ferocious strife and the breakdown of law and order. Yeah, okay, I just said that. 2.7 million. Unable to escape the country. Many of these have moved to Baghdad, putting further strain on a shattered infrastructure and adding to the city's sectarian tensions. And finally, outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, but available inside the bubble, just not very widely available, from the McClatchy newspapers. An 8-month McClatchy investigation in 11 countries on 3 continents. This is just apropos of the Supreme Court's decision this week on granting habeas corpus rights to detainees being held at Guantanamo. I thought the whole premise of this place was that rights weren't granted. You had them. They were recognized by the government, not given away like coupons for digital TV converters. An 8-month McClatchy investigation in 11 countries on 3 continents has found that there are dozens of men, and according to several officials, perhaps hundreds, whom the U.S. has wrongfully imprisoned in Afghanistan, Cuba, and elsewhere on the basis of flimsy or fabricated evidence, old personal scores, or bounty payments. McClatchy interviewed 66 released detainees, more than a dozen local officials in Afghanistan, and U.S. officials with intimate knowledge of the detention program. The investigation also reviewed thousands of pages of U.S. military tribunal documents. Most of the 66 were low-level Taliban grunts, innocent Afghan villagers, or ordinary criminals. At least 7 had been working for the U.S.-backed Afghan government and had no ties to militants, according to Afghan officials. In effect, many of the detainees posed no danger to the United States or its allies. The investigation also found that despite the uncertainty about whom they were holding, U.S. soldiers beat and abused many prisoners. McClatchy reporting also documented how U.S. detention policies fueled support for extremist Islamist groups. For some detainees who went home far more militant than when they arrived, Guantanamo became a school for jihad. Guantanamo also houses Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the alleged mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, who faces, along with 4 other high-profile detainees, military commission charges. But because the Bush administration set up Guantanamo under special rules that allowed indefinite detention without charges or federal court challenge before this week's Supreme Court decision, it's impossible to know how many of the 770 men held there were terrorists. One former administration official says the White House's initial policy and legal decisions, quote, probably made instances of abuse more likely. My sense, this former administration official says, is that decisions taken at the top probably sent a signal that the old rules don't apply. Certainly some people read what was coming out of Washington as the gloves are off, this isn't a Geneva world anymore, unquote. Burying the bad apples. McClatchy's interviews are the most ever conducted with former Guantanamo detainees by a U.S. news organization. The investigation found that top Bush administration officials knew within months of opening Guantanamo that many of the prisoners there weren't, quote, the worst of the worst, unquote. From the moment that Guantanamo opened in early 2002, former Secretary of the Army Thomas White said it was obvious that at least a third of the population didn't belong there. Of the 66 detainees interviewed by McClatchy, the evidence indicates that 34 of them, about half, had connections with militant groups or activities. At least 23 of those 34, however, were foot soldiers, conscripts, low-level volunteers, or adventure seekers who knew nothing about terrorism. Only 7 of the 66 were in positions to have had any ties to the leadership of al-Qaeda. It isn't clear that any of them knew any terrorists of consequence. If the former detainees interviewed by McClatchy are any indication, and several former high-ranking U.S. administration and defense officials say they are, most of the prisoners at Guantanamo weren't terrorist masterminds, but men who were of no intelligence value in the war on terrorism. Watch for this on your evening news tonight. I think they may make some room between tributes to Tim Russert to tell you about that. Maybe not. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. How's the nuclear waste disposal deal going? Well, the Environment Secretary in Britain, Hilary Benn, now urges local councils and other groups to provide an essential service to the nation by offering sites to bury a share of Britain's stockpile of radioactive nuclear waste. He said communities could expect, quote, jobs and other benefits, unquote, in return for taking on a dump. His plan offers skilled employment for hundreds of people over many decades. In addition, any community that ultimately hosts a facility will fulfill an essential service to the nation and would expect the government to ensure that the project contributes to its well-being, i.e., we'll pay you to take this stuff. See, the problem is they don't have any Indian tribes in Britain. How is the Inspector General deal going? An investigation by the NASA Inspector General finds that political appointees in the space agency's public affairs office work to control and distort public accounts of its researchers' findings about climate change for at least 2 years. From the fall of 2004 through 2006, the report said NASA's public affairs office, quote, managed the topic of climate change in a manner that reduced, marginalized, or mischaracterized climate change science made available to the general public. News releases in the areas of climate change suffered from inaccuracy, factual insufficiency, and scientific dilution, unquote. You don't want your science diluted. Ladies and gentlemen. Or maybe you do. Now, as mentioned before, of course, the Supreme Court issued a ruling this week granting detainees habeas corpus rights. And the president, meanwhile, was on a trip around Europe, his farewell trip, starting in Slovenia. That's that new Europe Don Rumsfeld was so fond of. And then moving over to old Europe, had a meeting with the Pope, fueling rumors in the British press that following his buddy Tony Blair, the president of the United States might be considering leaving the Methodist Church and converting to Roman Catholicism. Tony Blair converted to Catholicism last year. One of the several goofy rumors floating around the British press this weekend, the other that Hillary's failure in the campaign is going to lead to a divorce in the Clinton family. But anyway, back to the president. So he's in, Rome, in Paris, and his next and final stop is London before he returns home. Maybe on the way, maybe from Gay Paris, he had time to make a phone call.
Bonsoir, mon Paris. Sounds like finally fractured French to me, 43. How's Europe treating you this time?
Well, sir, you know the old song about you don't miss your well till your water
runs out. I think our European friends are, like Condi likes to say, reconcepticating their anti-me attitude now that it's my farewell tour.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe I should have held my farewell tour 4 or 5 years ago.
Well, sir, never too late to reap the reward of being about to leave office. Saw a bit of your meeting with Pope Benedict.
Uncle Ben?
Yeah.
He showed us the secret garden. Just beautiful. Looks a lot like T. Boone Peckin's country place.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you something, though, I've discovered about the Holy Father.
Yeah.
Don't let all that Catholic stuff throw you off. He's a very fine Christian gentleman. Well, we had a real good conversation about pro-life, which unfortunately got short when one of his advisors veered off on some anti-war deal, but still great moral clarity to the man.
He gave you some books, didn't he?
Yeah, and I'm looking so forward to reading them, you know, because I'm almost at the end of Condi's reading list, so.
And of course, this new French fella, Sarkozy, he's got the right attitude, doesn't he?
Cozy man? He is a great admirer of the free market, but I wouldn't necessarily invite him to a Heritage Foundation dinner, because this guy's kind of a ladies' man, if you know what I mean.
Well, he married that young model. Saw that.
Yeah. But even so, he's got kind of a French outlook on things. I mean, don't get me wrong. He's got his head screwed on straight ahead about the war on terror and everything. But I could swear he was putting a make on Laura during the dinner tonight.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Seems a little improbable.
Sort of typical of that so-called court to wait till I'm out of the country to stick a knife in the heart of my back, isn't it?
Supremes just don't like that whole detainee setup.
5 of them don't. 4 of them do.
No.
Still a lot of time till January. It's a sprint to the finish.
Hey, look, none of the liberals are spring chickens.
No, sir. You know, maybe a stressful vacation in Palm Beach for one of our older liberal friends.
That's interesting, Sprout.
What's that?
You're kind of hoping Florida decides the fate of the Supreme Court.
See, it just shows such an incomprehensive failure to understand the basic principles of Dick Cheney's view of executive power. If the president's hands are tied from holding the worst of the worst in confinement indefinitely, you might as well just send the keys to the White House over to Mr. Bin Laden. What's the point of being a war president if some other part of the government can just up and tie my hands?
No, you're upset.
Upset? I just feel like my hands are tied is all.
No, it's a bad feeling. Maybe you should get your lawyers together and, I don't know, just try to set up some rules to actually abide by the court order this time around.
Hey, look, you know, next thing you know, they're going to say we can't hold the worst of the worst incommunicando on vessels in international waters flying the flag of Syria.
No,
I don't think we need lawyers working on this. We need the good people at NASA. Just blast those detainees into space like Alberto wanted to do in the first place. Let's see Miss Ruth Bader Ginsburg try to get her rich delivered in orbit.
Don't think NASA could redesign the shuttle for captivity in the time he got left. Otherwise, it's not a half bad idea.
Tell you what, the cozy man understands is the importance of keeping the pressure on Iran.
Assumed as much.
See, he figures that without it, our whole policy of pressurizing Iran kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Well, important to use all the tools of strong diplomacy this time around, isn't it?
We're doing our best. Mm-hmm. Still got to have another talk with Condi. You know, right now she's kind of balking about making our case on Iran to the United Nations. Says, you know, something about the atmospherics of it don't feel right to her.
Basic thing, of course, is that the intelligence community has on the public record its finding that Iran doesn't have a nuclear weapons program.
Yeah, the Dickster is working that angle real hard. Mm. Got him some really excellent defectors supplying some very credibilitated alternative intelligence.
You want to be a little more careful this time with getting your defectors vetted by the company, don't you?
Well, sir, I do think the intelligence community has learned the important lessons of the past. I really don't think they want to go through being reorganized again. See, I think unlike certain judges, they understand the grave and gathering danger of trying to tie the hands of a wartime president.
I think we all do. Well, Sprout, just London and then back home, hmm?
Yeah, Tony Blair's promising to take us to a, what he says is a dynamite mass.
Well, Barr wishes you a safe trip home, and of course, we both do.
Yeah. Best to her and to the both of you.
So long, 43.
And he sold bad wine. And now, ladies and gentlemen, F is for FEMA.
F is for FEMA.
Criticized by a congressman, a watchdog group, and leaders on the Gulf Coast for its new policy of not delivering ice to the general public after a hurricane, a FEMA official this week explained his agency's policies. FEMA got burned, he says, when it kept tons of ice left over from the 2005 hurricane season for 2 years, until it went bad and had to be destroyed, the official said. Because of that, we had to improve our business practices of how to make this work, says James McIntyre, a national FEMA spokesman. If a state determines that there is a situation where lives would be saved if ice were available, or if there's sufficient medical emergency, FEMA won't provide the ice itself now. It has charged another government agency with the task of providing ice to civilians. The United States Army Corps of Engineers, to deliver up to 3 million pounds within 24 hours. But when it comes to the general public in terms of ice to beat the heat after a storm has knocked out power, there will be no federal ice. But if lives are to be saved, well, of course you would depend on the Army Corps of Engineers. They're the life-saving kind of people. FEMA, by the way, also was reported this week by CNN, gave away about $85 million in household goods meant for Katrina victims. They were basic kitchen goods and sleeping necessities. They sat in warehouses for 2 years, just like the ice, before FEMA gave it away to other federal and state agencies. FEMA was spending more than $1 million a year to store the material, and another agency wanted the warehouses torn down. The FEMA spokesperson, James McIntyre, declined a request for an interview, telling CNN the giveaway was, quote, not news. That's why CNN covered it. Photos from one of the facilities in Fort Worth show pallet after pallet of cots, cleansers, first aid kits, coffee makers, camp stoves, and other items stacked to the ceiling. Even though New Orleans area nonprofit groups say they could have used this stuff, the state agency FEMA consulted didn't take FEMA up on the offer, because apparently the state agency didn't know that there was a need in New Orleans either. Speaking of the Army Corps of Engineers, Corps officials did not violate any rules when they allowed defective pumps to be installed in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. That's according to a report from the Defense Department's Inspector General. The report did not investigate all the technical issues surrounding the pumps. The report says the Office of Special Counsel of the federal government is only part of our investigation. We need to determine if we accept that or not. The AP couldn't get a copy of the Inspector General's findings. They were first reported by the Times-Picayune. Officials with the Inspector General's office could not be reached for comment. The Office of Special Counsel said last October in a preliminary report there was a substantial likelihood the Corps acted improperly in handling the contract for the new pumps. This was a $33 million contract the Corps awarded to Moving Water Industries Corporation in early 2006. Corps officials installed Moving Water's pumps, 34 of them, on three major drainage canals before the 2006 hurricane season, despite a warning that the pumps would fail if put to the test during a hurricane. Oh, Moving Water Industries? It's owned by J. David Eller and his sons. Eller, a former business partner of former Florida Governor George Bush, in a venture that marketed Moving Water Industries pumps. The Inspector General's report said the Corps' failings were, quote, performance-related shortcomings. It did not break any laws or rules. It did not amount to a gross waste of funds or a danger to public health and safety. Just put in defective pumps that wouldn't have worked if they'd have been a hurricane. That's all. The agency, the Corps, was in a rush to award the contract, said the GAO report from the General Accounting Office, that resulted in deficiencies in key contract provisions. The report said the agency performed, quote, limited market research. Hey, would you folks like pumps at work? Didn't include that question on the survey. Used specifications for the pumps very similar to MWIs. There have been other reports that they actually used MWI specs. And drafted a contract not written as precisely as it should have been. Despite those findings, the GAO said the contract was generally in accordance with federal requirements. So it's okay with the feds that the Army Corps installed defective pumps. They're fine now. They're fine now. We know that because the Army Corps has told us so. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm, won't you? Spurred on by global warming and poorly planned development, swaths of southeast Spain are steadily turning into desert. Farmers are fighting developers over water rights. They're fighting over who gets to water their crops. And they're buying and selling water like gold on a burgeoning black market. Water will be the environmental issue this year, says the spokeswoman for the European Union's Environment Directorate. The problem is urgent and immediate. If you're already having water shortages in spring, you know it's going to be a really bad summer. The current crisis reflects a permanent climate change brought on by global warming. This according to the International Herald Tribune. It's a harbinger of a new kind of conflict, climate scientists say. Those of the future will focus on water. Climate change means the creeping deserts may eventually drive 135 million people off their land, according to UN estimates. Most of them are in the developing world, but southern Europe is experiencing the problem now. It's climate drying to the point that it's becoming more like Saharan Africa's, scientists say. Well, that will solve the problem of migration to Europe, won't it? News of the Warm, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, nothing against the person involved, but I have to say it may say more about Washington, D.C. than about Tim Russert that so many of the people, so many of the encomiums to him this weekend have singled out for special praise the fact that he was interested in his friend's children. As I say, that may say more about Washington, D.C. than about Tim Russert. That's so special. He cared about his friend's children. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the facilities of your internet on your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. Available as a free download to members of audible.com. www.audible.com and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And to be just like having rights granted to you by the Supreme Court if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, Email address for this broadcast and the playlist of the music heard hereon is available at harryshearer.com. And the video for 935 Lies can be seen at www.mydamnchannel.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Turn the fans way up.